Males are born. Men are built. This is the Great Man Podcast, where we want you to build great men as you allow other men to build you. Join New York Times best-selling author Stephen Mansfield, along with seasoned leaders of men, Anthony Flemons and JT McCrow, as we bring a wide range of experience and expertise to help you become the great man you are designed to be. With you this week are Anthony Flemons and JT McCrow.
JT, what's up, my guy?
Gentlemen, let us begin. Hey, I want to start off this podcast. Of course, you know the Great Man Podcast. We're actually here to help you with best practices. I was thinking about this.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how you become great is you just think about in business. You look at the best practices that you can do, and you do those hoping that you become the best.
Yeah.
That's why they call it best practices.
Yeah, it immediately makes me go to work, man, because that's a big saying.
Yeah, sure.
In our employment, man. And
so,
our company.
I mean, that's what we're here for, and this episode is no different. You know, you're going to agree or disagree with us. It doesn't matter to me. I'm humble enough to know that I'm not always right, but cocky enough to know that you're probably mostly wrong. So,
dude, that's a step forward, JT, for you to say that.
But listen, hey guys, remember we don't ask often, we don't ask for much, but please share the podcast. We would love for you to rate and leave us a review on whatever platform that you listen to us on, because the more ratings and reviews that we get, this podcast is pushed to more men. And that's what we want. We want to impact men's lives, because we have seen the evidence of men not being men. We see the evidence every day. So that's what we're here for. We want to help you. We want to help you help others to become great men. So just please share, please rate, please review. And why are you looking at me?
I mean, I'm just saying that they could skip Steven's part of the podcast, man, and just only listen to ours, man. I mean, we need the numbers, man.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's... Leave that as a review. I don't know.
Nah, just kidding.
Now, we do have some good things coming too. I had Steven and I were together Saturday, and man, just he is so pumped and so excited about what's coming and about what we're trying to put together, what's coming in 2025. So we're already planning out till next year. So a lot of good things happening, but man, we really need you guys to help us get the word out. So share that podcast for us.
Yeah. And I saw some, some film and stuff that Stephen recorded that is going to be geared toward people that possibly might want to financially support us.
Yeah, sure.
Do some things to widen the gate, widen the spectrum of the people that we can meet, give us the ability to do some forums and some outreaches and all these kinds of things, man. So it's big stuff coming, man.
Yeah, man. So this was an interesting twist. I wasn't expecting this whenever we started, because this is the part two of this particular subject, and I wasn't expecting Stephen to take this turn.
To jack off or not to jack off?
Yeah, you could say it that way, and let me just say now that this is going to be a rated R.
Yeah.
So no young ones listening, but...
It's really not going to be rated
It's R. not. I mean, we're pretty cool. But I was kind of taken back that he went to this. But then after I listened to it several times, I wasn't, because it made perfect sense that this, you know, masturbation and self-pleasure, and it's just a natural outcome, I think, to wounds that are not dealt with.
Yeah.
And again, you don't have to be wounded to deal with it. I know a lot of people a lot of men, that stumble across it, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, just curiosity. And then curiosity led to really an addiction,
yeah,
at a young age. So it is.
Before you get deep,
yeah,
don't you think it's natural, man? I mean, when you go to sleep, or men go to sleep, or when I go to sleep, a lot of times, man, I wake up and my hands in my pants, man. My hands are in my shorts, and it's just like a security blanket. Hey, that's mine, and you know I'm gonna hang on to it, man, and you know enjoy touching it while I'm asleep, man. You said this was gonna be rated R, man. But just like, don't you think that it's a natural thing for when you discover that to touch it and examine it, and at some point when you get to a certain age, you're going to arouse yourself. And so some people may fall into masturbation just by that, mm-hmm. or others may fall into masturbation and porn and all those things by being exposed to things mm-hmm. early on in life, like both of us happen to be. So I just thought it was curious that, you know, masturbation, and we're saying masturbation, we're not even talking about porn, but masturbation on its own, you feel like as well that it's a negative, that it's a thing that guys shouldn't be doing.
First of all, Jonas, have you ever been more uncomfortable than to hear Anthony talk about him waking up or going to bed with his hand in his shorts?
I'm going
to
tell you.
is it just me? Because I'm a little uncomfortable.
So, Jonas, now be real, man. You're in the bed, man, and you're just watching TV or something or relaxing. You never stick your hand in your pants.
What? Now, see.
I'm just asking Jonas.
No.
I'm asking.
You changed the whole thing. You said, not watching TV. You said you wake up or go to bed with your hands in your pants.
Yeah, just unconsciously. Hey, this is a place, man, where we can be free and not get shamed.
What did Madea say? Oh, hell no. Is that what she said?
Bruh.
I'm not.
Help me here, man.
Anyway.
Never happened to you.
Anyway.
Never happened to you.
You know, here.
Wait. Let him answer, man.
I know what his answer is. He's never happened. He's married to my daughter. Anyway,
there's nothing wrong with that, dude.
Here's the thing.
Come on, man.
It is natural, by the way. And you know who agrees with you is Planned Parenthood. Or the definition. This is interesting. So I looked up, you know, what is masturbation? You know, just in general. I mean, what do people think about it?
Yeah,
how do they define it? Yeah. So, and I know that this is not just Planned Parenthood. I know this is probably on Wikipedia, and a lot of people use this, but they're the ones that came up first. It says the act of touching your own genitals for sexual stimulation, and it is perfectly normal and can be a healthy way to learn your body. Mm. So that's how they define it. And Cleveland Clinic, you know, which is, hey, this is, they're no schmoes, you know, I mean, this is Cleveland Clinic. They actually agree with that definition and actually say that masturbation has no severe side effects and you should feel comfortable touching yourself and experiencing self-pleasure. They also say that I loved how they said this. Scientifically, there's nothing immoral or wrong about masturbation. And, you know, I found that a little offensive because I guess there's no emotion in scientific stuff.
That's a great point that science can't make moral claims.
Well, they tell us we can't, but yet they just did.
But science by its very own definition cannot make a moral claim.
Yeah. Now, they also say, again, that it's healthy and that it's natural. Boy, I think that opens the doors to a lot of things that people could say that is natural for them that may not be natural for you, but it's natural for me. And I think that's a dangerous statement. When I read it, my first thought was, man, that is not a good statement for a well-respected clinic to put on their website.
Okay. So what about the guy that's married and he's faithful mm-hmm. to his bride?
Yeah.
And she has some issue where she doesn't, it's painful, say, for her to have intercourse.
Yeah.
And
I have counseled a couple with this very thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's painful. And they come up with this thing where maybe she will pleasure him mm-hmm. by masturbation mm-hmm. or he pleasures himself while engaging with something else mm-hmm. in her or mm-hmm. doing oral sex or whatever it is. But what about in those situations? Is that the same dynamic as looking at porn and creating this harem or this false mate and masturbating to that?
So I think, again, let's talk about context real quick, because the context of this conversation is out of woundedness by women, right? That's our context. That's, you know, going with what we said last week to what Stephen has said. So if I look at that context, what you just said was there was a couple that came up with a solution because there was an extreme condition that they figured out how to do as a couple. That I have no problem with at all. Because what we're talking about is self-pleasure. It's funny how it is all about self, and that word is a big deal because, you know, it's like self-pleasure, but what happened to self-control?
I'm just throwing stuff out there that's going to come up, because these are the arguments that come up when you describe in the context of what we're talking about. We're talking about woundedness, and as a result of bitterness, me going into this place in this dirty room and creating this fantasy world and creating you know, pleasure for themselves. But so I just want to say, and I don't know if you're saying it or if I'm saying it or if Steven's saying it, but there are some times, man, that when couples have come up with these things, I don't know that I can go and say, hey, that's wrong for you guys to do that.
So the way I look at it is that within reason, anything a couple comes up with because of a condition, because of a situation, that they're wanting to please each other, then I don't know what's defiled or not in that situation.
Yeah. So basically you're telling me you want me to get off of this and you don't want to discuss it.
No.
I'm just throwing it out there because opposition always comes up in this subject, man.
Yeah.
And I'm creating some space around it for people to have a conversation or for people not to feel guilty if they've come up with these things in their own households, within their own marriages, because I know that there are men that deal with ED and they need help. There's women that come up that have situations where penetration is painful or for whatever reason. And there's situations where these people come up with these alternatives to have a successful sex life that are not the norm.
Yeah.
And it just happens. And I don't know, you know, that's not what we're talking about today is my point.
It's not, because you keep talking about partners and we're talking about self. So that I'm acting out again, maybe it started out as curiosity, but you have to admit that masturbation is in part how I view a woman. It's in part of what do I think about womanhood? Because if I can objectify a woman, then I've got something innately wrong with me or deformed in me that I would pleasure myself and use a woman as an object to do that.
Yeah.
And did you see what I'm saying?
Again. I do.
Okay, great.
I do. And I know that we'll get into this too, but the whole new, you know, if a guy can do it, I can do it. And women finding themselves not only doing masturbation, not only performing masturbation on themselves, but creating whole cultures and business profiles and businesses around toys and all this kind of stuff for women. And it's funny that we were talking to a young lady about this today.
Yeah.
And she said that she had never heard so much openly discussed about women self-pleasuring themselves until what?
Until women became empowered.
Yeah.
And feeling of empowerment.
Until women begin to proselytize and preach this sermon about we don't need men and this is what I can do and I can do it for myself better.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different pieces of this puzzle out there, but go ahead. So get on track now.
No. I mean, it's again how I started the whole thing. Best practice. What is the best avenue? What is the best way for you to be a man? And we've said about a lot of subjects, it's not about self. It's about others. It's about, you know, we're made to protect not just ourselves, but to protect others, not to serve ourselves, but to serve others. And then masturbation comes in as to serve ourselves only,
right?
Not anybody else. In fact, we use others to self-pleasure.
Isn't it cool though to think about this, man, as we get into this subject, that bitterness, man, is the root of a lot of different things, man. It's the root of a lot of aggressive behavior that men have towards women. And I'm going to suppose that women have towards men. It's the root of a lot of disrespect or dishonor or, well, you know, let her do her own thing. It's just the root of so many things. And a lot of things that we always talk about when we're talking about a subject, we go to the root.
Yeah.
And that's where we're starting today is this root of bitterness. So I've tried and I've been hurt by this woman. What's my reaction? Rather than dealing with the hurt, or dealing with the negating the bitterness, I come up with my own way to self-soothe.
Yeah.
And then that's where we get into this masturbation.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't know if we're going to get into it or not, but remember the quote that Stephen said about C.S. Lewis, man?
No, great quote.
That was strong.
Hey, in fact, I mean, look, I've read a lot of C.S. Lewis books, and I'm thinking, where in the heck? I have never read that quote in any book that he, I mean, honestly, I would venture to say that I've probably read all of his books.
Yeah.
So, Jonas, do you know where, did you do any research whatsoever?
Of course he did.
Of course he did.
Yeah, I was able to find it.
Where does that quote come from?
That comes from a personal letter that he wrote to a guy named Keith Masson. Mason? Two S's, I don't know, in 1956. And that letter is included in a book called The Collected Letters of C.S. Lewis, Volume 3.
Wow, I've not read that one then. Because I retract what I said.
Yeah, because personally I thought it was something that Stephen wrote and came up with, and then to legitimize it or make it have more power, he said that C.S. Lewis.
Yeah,
you know how Stephen is.
You would think that way out of your woundedness.
I'm
you
very
would think
suspicious.
That way. So, I mean, I think it would be beneficial. Let's just read that quote again.
Yeah.
And I know it's a little long.
And you're not going to do it as much justice as...
I'm not, but...
Well, go ahead and read it.
C.S. Lewis said this, "For me, the real evil of masturbation would be that it takes an appetite which in lawful use..." You have to think about that. Lawful use meaning marriage. "Leads the individual out of himself to complete his own personality... In that of another.
Yeah.
It sends the man back into the prison of himself." And I think that is an important line. It sends him back to the prison of himself. Because being a great man means we're trying to break these things.
For
the sake of others. We're trying to break these wounds, break these traumas, break these things that have happened to us. And not be ruled by them, but yet this takes us back to a prison that we've really put ourselves in. "It sends the man back into the prison of himself, there to keep a harem of imaginary brides."
The dude, man, had a way with words, man.
Yeah, that is...
Because that is what you create.
And if you think about it, if you're a man listening to us today, if you really think about it and you're dealing with this... You have a harem.
Yeah.
And there's a plethora of women in that harem that you pull from according to your mood, according to what happened that day, according to history, according to maybe people that you've been with in the past. It is a harem of people. It's not just one.
Can I define harem for people like me who didn't know that word?
You did not. Man. Oh, yeah, sure. That's yeah, awesome. Go ahead, man.
A harem has a couple definitions. It could be... the wives or concubines of a polygamous man, or a group of female animals sharing a single mate.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
So it's like the lion has a harem of female lions that he has his choice of.
Right.
And look, we're not animals. I mean, there's got to be a difference between human and animals, men and animals, other than where their, you know, bowl is located in the kitchen.
You know, and speaking on this, man, speaking about freedom and creating bondage in our lives, and I know that a lot of you are not Christians, man, but I am. And I believe that these sexual encounters we have prior to marriage, man, we are married to those people in some sense.
Sure.
We have created a bond or a tie to people that we have had sex with in the past. And if you want to know if I'm lying or not, man, there have been times, man, not recently, but in the midst of making love to the woman that I'm with, that the face or the experience or what I did with another woman comes into my mind completely without my control. It comes in and I have the opportunity there to arrest it and get back on course and where I am. But sometimes, man, these bonds that we create, they pop up in the most inopportune times and capture us.
Do you know why?
Yeah.
Because what you orgasm to, you're glued to.
Yeah.
It's a real simple statement.
Chemically in our bodies.
Now that's scientific.
Yeah.
What you orgasm to, you're glued to. Meaning that whatever in that moment, because our brain is firing at its there is nothing higher for a man or a woman than orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
The brain is just, it's like 4th of July fireworks going on.
Every possible thing that's getting released gets released during that time.
And so what you're looking at, even imaginary, because your brain doesn't know the difference between imaginary
right.
and real in that moment. But whatever you orgasm to, you're glued to. It's just a real simple statement. A lot of brain scientists say whatever fires together, wires together. So in that moment, whatever you're looking at, whatever you're experiencing, that's what you become glued to. And that's what you're chemically, that's what your brain is wanting again. It wants that feeling again, that dopamine, that oxytocin. It is whatever that was. Yeah, I want that again. And that's where it becomes dangerous because, you know, masturbation is one of those things that you don't have to have anybody else around. You can do it as many times in a day as you're capable of doing because it doesn't cost you anything because you don't have to lure a woman.
You don't have to pregame.
You don't have to do. Yeah. Great. You don't have to have a college pregame show in order to get that.
Yeah.
It's just you and your imagination. The problem is your brain doesn't know any different.
Yeah.
So when you get with a real woman, and Stephen alluded to this, PIED, porn-induced erectile dysfunction, is a big deal.
Yeah.
And I don't.
And he said, especially for men in the military.
Well, if you want to know the truth, I mean, the age that it's growing the most is between 14 and 21. Yeah. Think about this. You have teenage kids that have erectile dysfunction because they spend so much time watching porn and masturbating that when it comes to their wedding night or their whenever they become with a real woman, they're not going to be able to perform everything that they've imagined because the brain goes, no, this is what
it takes.
This is what arouses me.
Right.
And everybody has an arousal template.
Yeah.
And it's like when you condition yourself to a woman that doesn't exist, then the women that do exist, you're not aroused by.
Yeah.
And I do believe that in part, it comes from a woundedness that you've been wounded by a woman. And therefore, I'm not going to deal with a woman because I can pleasure myself. And I'm good with that.
I did all the right things. I treated her the way that I should. I said the things that I should have. And it still didn't lead me to this situation where we get to be intimate with each other. So I'm going to get a chance to choose the set of boobs that I want.
Yeah.
The waistline that I want. The height that I want. The hair that I want. The booty that I want. I'm going to get to piece together this woman through searching and finding this perfect template of the woman that I want to have. And then I pleasure myself to that. And then when you are married and your wife is who she is, perfect as God made her, she doesn't meet all of those different pieces of piece together woman that you've created in your mind. And you find it hard to be aroused by her.
It really, for me, it does boil down to what does a man really want? At the end of the day, what is the one thing that every man wants?
Can I answer that?
Yeah, sure. It may be wrong. I'm going to tell you that it's wrong, but go ahead. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
My guess is connection.
No. I told you if it's wrong.
Okay.
A man wants respect.
Right.
So in his mind, even in masturbation, he's respected. He's respected as the great lover. He's respected as the savior of this particular situation. He is respected as a man. And he's deformed it in the sense of this is how I'm respected.
Yeah. You know, I was watching and I watch a lot of stuff in discussions and I'm in forums and groups, man. But this woman was asking a question. Is it true that when a man comes to a situation or comes to a state in his life where he's financially able, he is settled and in his career, that when he gets to this place and all of a sudden he goes, now it's time for me to get married, that he will simply marry the woman that's in front of him when he comes to this place. And she was talking to this guy and she goes, isn't that true?
Mm.
And he goes, no. a man is going to marry a woman where he feels respected, honored. And then deeper than that, someone that is able to pull him close and make him feel the connection that Jonas is talking about and include it in this couple.
Yeah.
That is the woman that he's going to, because you can find a woman that will do a lot of things, but you might not marry her.
Cause you're not going to respect her.
Right.
Yeah. Look, I'm going to say something here that is
get us in trouble.
Men want to be respected, and we don't always act respectable, but respect should be unconditional.
Right.
Just as love is unconditional.
Right. Cause I was about to push back on that,
but it's not, because, and I've said this in, you know, wrongly, I should say, is that, well, if you want to be respected, then be respectable. And again, it's as if we're in the perfect situation and the perfect mindset to be respected, but that's not what men need. Men need to be respected even when they're not respectable to a point. Now, the caveat, the qualification for that is if you continue to act unrespectable and you don't change, then I do think that there is a line that is drawn to go, okay, you have proven that you're not going to be respectable because you don't even understand that you should be respectable in this arena, in this particular situation. Then I do think that there is some outs, I should say, in that. But ultimately, men don't want to be loved. Love comes, they feel, with respect.
Love is expressed
through respect.
Through respect for a guy. And you know, I want you to get back to this C.S. Lewis, man.
Yeah.
But it's just curious, man, that we have all these books and all these explanations as to what it takes to have a successful marriage. But women, on the other hand, want to feel
loved.
They want to feel loved. And they don't want to have to perform to feel loved.
Yeah.
So they don't want to have to behave in a way constantly 100% of the time that makes them lovable to be loved.
Yeah.
But a lot of times men get the impression that we must perform 100% of the time in a way that invokes an expression of respect for us to be respected. And so there's an exchange that happens, especially in marriage, that you commit to love this woman even when she's behaving in a way that's not lovable.
Yeah.
And the woman commits to respect this man in a way that, even when he's not acting in a way to be respected, that she will still respect him, which creates this vacuum or creates this space where they both begin to get what they want and begin to become who it is the other person needs them to be.
And, you know, it's funny because, and again, we're Christian, we believe in scripture. You know, scripture reminds men to love their wives because we hold respect in such high regard. And it reminds wives to respect their husbands because they hold love in such a high regard. And it's both should be unconditional to a point. You get to choose whatever point that is, I guess. But men want respect. And when they don't get respect, they'll actually respect themselves, which I believe is where self-pleasure comes into place.
Yeah.
And I've been disrespected by women. I was disrespected by my mom, my first girlfriend, my first wife, my second wife, my third wife, my boss, my whatever. I have been so disrespected by them that I'm going to respect myself.
I'm going to cut them off.
I'm going to cut them off and I'm going to love them. And maybe I'll even use them in my fantasy. Mm. Because
I thought that was curious.
That's where I'll get back at them.
Yeah.
Is I'll use them in my fantasy world
and make them behave the way that I feel like they should be behaving in this real world.
Which, by the way, is crazy. Cause when I thought about that, you know, it was like, okay, we think about sex trafficking. We look at that and we see kids and we, you know, it's like all of, I mean, for the most part, not everybody, because there wouldn't be sex trafficking if there wasn't a client. So most men who are men would look at that and go, that is just disgusting. I mean, just castrate them. That's what I say all the time. You castrate the dude, you know, the problem goes away.
Castrating, is that the cutting off of the member or the balls?
Just cut it all off, Jim. Just make them 2 inches away from being a girl. But it's like I thought about it, and it's like, man, masturbation and fantasy about a woman and her doing things that there's no way a woman that's real could do, or man,
it's, on demand. Always.
It's literally sex trafficking women using the highway of my own mind.
All right. Start over and read the C.S. Lewis, and I promise I won't interrupt you this
time. You want me to just start? I mean,
start over, and I'm going to let you read through without interrupting.
Here's where I'm going to start. Sends the man back to the prison of himself there to keep a harem of imaginary brides. And this harem, once admitted, so once you let in, works against him ever getting out and really uniting with a real woman. For this harem is always accessible, always subservient, and calls for no sacrifices, no adjustments, and can be endowed with erotic psychological attractions which no woman can rival. Among those shadowy brides, he's always adored, which is pride, always the perfect lover. I found that funny, by the way. No demand is made on his unselfishness, no mortification ever imposed on his vanity. In the end, they become merely the medium in which he increasingly adores
himself.
Probably that's the truest statement of masturbation, is you think that you're adoring whoever the fantasy is. But you're actually, that's why they call it self-pleasure, adoring yourself. And it's like Stephen said, imagined sex isolates us from the reality of real sex. So we thrust upon this attitude of this expectation that this real woman in front of me should act as the one in my imaginary mind.
Right.
And here's what it does to women, by the way. It robs them of growing old gracefully. And Stephen didn't bring this up, but man, I thought about this. How old are you?
I'm about to be 60 years old. I'm 59.
So that means your wife is in her 50s unless you rob the cradle.
Yeah, she's in her 50s.
So here's what it does. And I really seriously thought deeply about this. It robs me of maturing in my love and my ideal of what a woman is. Because if I'm looking at porn, if I'm always in my imaginary mind, there's a certain look that a woman has that my wife cannot meet. Because age does things to women, and it should be that as age takes its place, then I take my place as a man, and I find that attractive. Because what did I say earlier? What I orgasm to, I'm glued to. So if I'm always looking for the younger woman in my imagination, then as my wife ages, then that's not going to be a turn on. And that is against nature. Because what should happen is, as my wife and I grow old together, that's what becomes sexy to me.
You know, and I just remember something that Stephen said along these lines. He goes, when men are being, I forget the word that he used, but I'm going to say apprehensive or holding back in this sexual time with their wives, they figure in their heads that he must have some active dream life, or I forget the word that he has, but they can put it together that all of a sudden that I'm not attractive or I'm not what's turning him on. Something in them says, man, he must have an active imagination about the women that he's imagining.
Sure.
And man, that's a hurtful moment, because think about it on our side, what they could look back at.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I always say to my wife, thank God that you're not a physically attractive person, because that would not be to my benefit. meaning that men are physically attractive and women are attracted
to, you mean?
Attracted to security, to maturity. I mean, there's a different, you know, look, my body's changed, my wife's body's changed. I mean, and I would have to, again, I'm fortunate. her body hadn't changed much. She's not changed much, honestly. I mean, I'm not just saying that to say that. It's true. But my body has changed. I'm not the same. Women are not as physically attracted as we are. They're emotionally attracted. And they are like, can you give me security? Can you love me no matter what? And masturbation, let's just be clear about this. You're not thinking of nothing when you masturbate. So you've looked at something, you have seen something that you are imagining to help you get to the place of orgasm. That's just a fact. And so those things, that is what women are competing with. And so you get into a relationship that masturbation and porn are okay, then there's an undue pressure put on women to perform in that arena. And that's what I'm saying. It robs women of growing old gracefully. I know my wife listens to this podcast. I'm not just saying this to get brownie points. I love the way my wife looks. She does not look the way she looked when I met her at 16, and that's okay. And actually, she's probably more beautiful to me today than she was then because we've both matured. That's one thing that masturbation robs you of. Again, I started this whole podcast, this whole episode, with saying we want best practices for you. And the best practice, the best way forward, the best way to grow is to be a man who loves one woman his entire life. And they grow old together. And again, I know that's not everybody's story. And I know friends that have listened to this that have divorced and the divorce was inevitable. But they've taken these same principles and going, okay, I'm going to start over again with this one, right? And they said, we're going to grow gracefully together. Man, what's beautiful to me at 20 is not beautiful to me when I'm 30, 40, 50, 60, 70. I just watched a video of a man approaching his wife on Valentine's Day, and he had to be 80. And he said, are you still my Valentine? And she was like 79. And man, they hugged and embraced, and it was weird, and it was beautiful. Because what's beautiful to him has changed and matured. And that's what we want for men. We actually want you to mature in thought. And what happens with masturbation, it keeps you at a certain level of manhood that is almost adolescent and boyish. It's almost like you're 13 years old sitting in your room and just experiencing this. And we understand that it's natural. I mean, all of us guys, I mean, especially guys 30 and under, I mean, it was just porn and masturbation was introduced as a natural thing. It's, yeah, this is just what's common to man. But it doesn't mean it's what's common to a great man. Mm.
Do you want to speak at all to single men or men who are decidedly celibate or celibate for various reasons?
Yeah. If you look at self-control and self-pleasure, they're at odds with each other. Because self-control means no matter what, I know that's not what's best for me. So I'm going to have the self-control not to do it. And it's like, you know, body count is a big thing these days, but it's like we don't care about body count until they become marriage material. Then we care about body count. But it's like, if I've not saved myself, if I've not done the things that I need to do, how can I expect the person that I want to marry to do the same thing that I just did? Does that make sense?
It does. I'm just wondering, what if your goal isn't to marry?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Here's something.
I'm tired of hearing myself talk.
On the celibacy thing, man. For me, the definition of being celibate is abstaining not only from marriage, but it's abstaining from sexual intercourse. That's the act of being celibate.
Sexual intercourse or more than that?
Yeah, so I would go
sexual. I guess
sexual pleasure.
Well, I don't know. Depending on your morality, man. I mean, it means sexual intercourse is what the definition of celibacy is. Sexual relationships. You've decided to abstain from not only marriage but sexual relations. And sexual relations, man, I mean, I think that that's where like the weird zone comes in for these guys. They go, hey, I'm not going to get married and I'm not going to have sex with women, but I'm going to do this thing. And that's where I think this whole discussion comes into is what is acceptable.
Yeah.
What is not acceptable? Is it okay for me as a single guy that's decidedly single and I'm not going to pursue a woman, I'm not going to have intercourse with women, what is my outlet? And I think that that's the question that you're asking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because you say, what is your outlet? Why does there need to be an outlet sexually?
Is that a real question, man?
It's a real question because yeah. The only reason you know that is because you've been watching and listening to things that promote that. So it's saying, as a single guy, then I have to masturbate? I have to look at porn? I have to do these things in order to relieve myself? Or is the best practice is to say, no, contain yourself, control yourself, because this is one of the parts of being a great man is you actually do control that. It doesn't control you.
Yeah. Like the incel movement and men being decidedly celibate, man, I think that that is a huge challenge, man. It is a big freaking something to take on. And I think it really needs to be thought through before you take it on, because what is it meaning to you? Is it just meaning I'm not going to marry a woman and I'm not going to pursue a woman and I'm not going to do the hard work that it takes to arouse a woman and keep a woman in a place where she is willing to make love to me and have sex to me? Is that what it means? Is that what you're saying to yourself? Or are you saying, hey, I just want to do my own thing and not pour into anybody and please myself? And that's where the C.S. Lewis quote is most vibrant, man, is that you draw into yourself and you create this harem. And you missed one of the last lines. He said, but what a sad life.
You didn't give me time to get there. What do you mean I missed it? Bro,
it's been 30 minutes ago.
Whatever.
You never went into it. But man, what a sad life.
Yeah.
But producer Jay, what are your thoughts like on this whole people that have decided to be a single, or they're going to abstain from sex for a lifetime, or not engage and not pursue a woman, all those kinds of things. And this is new to me. In my perspective, but with you being in the age group that you're in, I'm assuming that you may see it more often than I. What are those guys doing? Are they feeling like, hey, this is my right, since I'm denying myself these other things, this is my right to pleasure myself, and this is my right to relieve myself in these moments?
I'm thinking of different categories of people in my head right now. I'm thinking of all, you know, swings of the pendulum. So you've got, let's go to one extreme, monks. People who decide on a life of celibacy for what understandably is a noble cause, a life of service, a life of seeking, a life of celibacy. And then you've got people like Stephen always talks about, who are celibate, or the men going MGTOW, men going their own way,
yeah.
Men who are fed up with women who are going to go pursue, or who are going to be celibate. I don't view that as a healthy version of celibacy. And then you've got people, let's say, especially in my age group, a big conversation is same-sex attraction. And so people are saying, okay, well, if there are people out there who believe that I should not be in a same-sex relationship, then what? Am I supposed to be, like, it's like asking, it's, they phrase it as a rhetorical question, like, am I supposed to be celibate my entire life? It's like, what I hear us saying is, yeah, maybe.
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 And so, but for most people, especially my age, that's an unfathomable life. What were you going to say, JT?
Yeah, but because why? I mean, what's the main goal in that way of thinking?
Yeah, pleasure. Experience, pleasure, or just experiencing life in all of its grandeur or whatever.
So pleasure and maturity are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
So is your goal to have pleasure, is your goal to mature in your life, grow old and be wise and be significant in your 50s, 60s, and 70s?
Yes. And I would tack on to that I heard someone say, I forget who it was, that you can live life without sex, but you cannot live life without connection.
Yeah, that's right.
And so people, I think, view sex as the only form of connection that they want.
And you have to ask the question, why do they think that? Is because maybe that's the only thing they've seen.
Right. And yeah. I think that's all we're told.
And again, I think it goes back to, again, the whole context of this conversation is woundedness. And are you wounded to where you're self-soothing? And again, a multifaceted different ways, but we're talking about masturbation today. Is that one of the ways that you're self-soothing? Are you going into, have you created your own mental man cave that's where you go and that's where you're isolated and that's where you get to do the things that you want to do that nobody else sees because it's in the dark, it's dimly lit, and you get to think about whatever you want to think about and you're respected, you're loved, everybody is subservient to you. I mean, all of the things that we've talked about, is that where you go, is that mental man cave that you can act out your wildest of dreams. Again, best practices. That will have an effect because you can't stop consequences. That will have an effect on how you think about women, what you think about marriage, what you think about yourself. It has consequences beyond anything that you intended. And I think that's what Stephen was wanting for us to break down was, yes, culture says it's okay. Actually, culture says this is normal.
And good.
And good, and there's no harm in it, which is a lie, because best practices is to keep yourself pure. Because here's the thing, if you practice self-control before you meet a woman, you'll have self-control when you meet a woman. Mm. And that you have positioned yourself to go, best practice is to wait until marriage. That's the best practice, is to say, I'm going to lead you, because if you're a man, you're leading a woman, you're protecting, you're providing. I'm going to lead you in such a way that you trust me with your life. And that means I'm not going to take advantage of you along the way. And actually, I value you so much that I can wait. Now, that's best practice. A lot of people don't do that. A lot of people don't wait, and I understand. But I have done so much premarital counseling. The statistics are just factual in the sense that if you do this before marriage, the probability of divorce is higher than, meaning that I have had so many couples that say, well, you know, we're going to live together, want to try it out. Okay, you know, go ahead and live together. Go ahead and try it out. But that's not the best, because what you're saying is you have a 70% risk, a higher risk of divorce than the person who doesn't do that. But yet we give in to, because there's no self-control. Mm-hmm. And there's no just, I'm making a decision. I don't care about my wounds. In fact, I'm going to deal with my wounds, because you've heard me say, what you don't work out, and that means the wounds that you have an emotional tear that you have to deal with. So I'm going to deal with the emotional part of that wound, because if you don't deal with the emotional part, physically you'll act it out in some way. And somebody else is going to be the victim of you physically acting it out. That's part of the consequence. And that sucks for the other person, and it should suck for you.
You know, and I think this is a good place to say this, man, because of the life perspective that we come from, or the Christian perspective that we come from, like, we're not going to have an answer for those things outside of what our beliefs are, as in same-sex attraction and those types of things. So I don't have a real outlet or an explanation of how you're supposed to behave outside of the confines of marriage and biblical marriage, because it's not my experience, and I'm not trying to proselytize that lifestyle. If someone decides to live that way, they can. But unfortunately, I don't have information to help you live in that manner outside of what I know to be the truth of the Bible.
Yeah.
And so within the context of the Bible, I know that, like, bitterness and having these things or resentment and holding them towards women in our lives, this is a natural outlet that we begin to go within ourselves and say, I'm not going to deal with women and I'm not going to try anymore. And I can never get it right. So I'm just going to do my own thing. I'm going to live my own way. I'm going to get into porn and I'm going to do all these things. And what we're telling you is that that's a sad life.
Yeah.
To get into yourself and give up on pursuing, give up on trying, because there's a lot of women out there that are not going to receive a great guy.
Sure.
There's a lot of women out there that have not been trained in a way to receive a great guy. And there's a lot of men out here that haven't been trained to pursue a woman in a way that's going to engage them and make them want to be engaged by you.
Yeah.
So the bottom line, what Stephen was talking about, he said, get healthy,
mm-hmm.
get healthy. And that means to examine ourselves in the places that we're low, try to build them up. In the places that we're high, try to get them down to a level that is acceptable within the confines of a marriage. Because this whole thing about marriage and getting together, when we see women, man, we are attracted to their bodies and attracted to them physically. Unfortunately, that doesn't last. It Yeah. doesn't stay. Women may get engaged and be attracted to a man that can lay it down and really do it in the bed. At some point in life, man, that is not going to last. Like, it doesn't last forever. But what does last is the honor and respect and being able to live a life that is honorable and respectable to each other. And those are the things that we have to build on, because they can last forever.
Yeah.
But that woman being up and tight and bright and boobs up in the air, it's not going to last.
Yeah.
It's going to begin to lag. And men could last an hour. It's going to get to a place where it's maybe 10 minutes. But we have to get to a place, man, where we understand that there's more to this relationship than these simple moments of sex and all these things. And how do we get around that? How do we build a relationship that's built on more than these few moments of sexual intercourse that keeps us and helps us survive when things change?
Yeah. Because I think if you build a relationship on sex, you've built a relationship on sand. It's pretty clear that if you build something on sand, water will erode it away. If you've ever built a sandcastle, you come back the next day, it's gone because the tide came in and washed it away. What we're saying is that build on something that's sustainable through life's challenges, because life's going to send you challenges that is unexpected. And what you said was so true. Because I'm thinking about this now in my 50s, is that if I don't allow myself to mature and to grow, then I'll always go back to that 14, 15, 16-year-old boy that was turned on by something that's not realistic at the moment. And I rob myself, and I actually rob my wife of maturity. And that's what we want. Great men mature, no matter what stage of life you're in. If you're in your teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, it doesn't matter. Maturity is what makes you great, period. Not staying the same makes you great. And the way that we look at women and the way that we deal with our wounds that women have created in us, that's what Stephen was talking about. Like, don't let the wounds of the past, the bitterness, set in to where you view women in such a way that you disregard them and say, I'll self-pleasure myself. I'll take care of it myself. I'll masturbate. I'll do everything that my body says that I need. Don't settle for that.
Yeah. And, you know, in closing, man, you know, Stephen ended that podcast. He said, my desire is that men would have marriages where sex is fulfilling and sex
glorious,
said, you know. Yeah. He said, if you find that in your marriage it's not, then my desire for you is to do the hard work of finding out why and finding out how to recapture that and rebuild that flame, because that's the hard work, man. You can withdraw from your marriage and go, you know what? I'll go over here and do this thing and satisfy myself and live out these last 30 years of my life alone without trying, because I've tried before. But at some point, if you want to be an honorable man, if you want to be a man of God, if you want to be a man that lives by a code of ethics, then you'll go to your bride and figure out what it is, get some help, go to counseling, whatever it is, have these deep, necessary conversations to find out what's blocking, what's causing this. and work it through and find out what a proper sex life looks for you, looks like for you at this age.
Yeah. Because at the end of the day, a great man, whether you're single or married, serves the purpose of, I'm not going to serve my weakness. I'm going to serve my purpose. Mm. And that is the art of being a great man.
To join the Great Man community or to book Stephen, Anthony, or JT to speak at your man's event, go to greatman.tv. There, you'll also find incredible resources to help you become the great man you are made to be. The Great Man Podcast is a Wise Company production.